Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
Ah, it is a Wednesday. We are stacked. It is great to have you in. There's a lot of stories developing. Live in Los Angeles, this is The Herd. Wherever you may be and however you may be listening. Fox Sports Radio, iHeartRadio, FS1. The Herd brought to you by Jersey Mike Subs. A sub above. Great to have them on board. They're delivering sandwiches to the crew today, and we love that. Joy Taylor, how are you?
I eat Jersey Mike's once a week. This is great for me.
Right by my house. Today
Italian,
they're free.
Add Mike's Way, add yellow mustard. It's a delicious lunch.
So let's start the show with this. The basketball culture in America is different than the football culture. There are things I like about the basketball culture, and there are things I like about the football culture. I think I was raised more, my parents were more football culture than basketball culture. I did not get my way all the time. So the Kyrie Irving situation now is a full-blown mess in Brooklyn. I never thought it would work, but this is not about me being right or wrong. He's not shown up for multiple games. He won't be here for the rest of the week. What it really fascinates me is, notice Steve Nash, the coach, walking on eggshells. Notice the media walking on eggshells. The Brooklyn general manager, the commissioner, walking on eggshells. There's videos, maskless Kyrie. Last night on a political call, I don't like what happened in the Capitol either. We all got to go to work. Walking on eggshells. That, of course, is the basketball culture. Shoe companies, AAU coaches, the commissioner coddling, worshiping basketball stars. So, of course, they think they can just take time off and be bad teammates. Maybe we should stop babying narcissistic behavior. James Harden pointing fingers. Excuse me, Houston did a marvelous job to build a roster around you. 3 years ago, I thought it was the second best roster in the league. P.J. Tucker and Chris Paul and James Harden and Clint Capella. And they had a basketball coach built for you and a GM that was like an Ivy League guy. And James Harden couldn't make any of it work. He didn't want to play defense. He wouldn't change his style. And nobody ever said anything because, ooh, he's a basketball star. In the NFL, it's different. Antonio Brown was a bad teammate. He got destroyed by the NFL media. Look at how the Kyrie Irving situation is being handled. Everybody's afraid to call him out. Folks, he's a bad teammate. What example do you need beyond Boston, where the stories are legendary? I made one call last night for 3 minutes. Was told the stories in Boston are outrageous, but they don't want to make them public because then players won't want to come to Boston. I've been watching the NBA for 40 years. Boston always gets players. And every decade they win a title, it feels like. And then Kevin Durant, by the way, now he has a teammate that's bailed on him, which is just unfortunate because Kevin's a remarkable talent. But when Kevin left the Warriors, I said it at the time, would somebody stop him, please? Would somebody shake Kevin Durant? You're leaving Steph Curry, one of the most selfless superstars I've ever seen, to Kyrie Irving, who's a bad teammate. Did anybody tell Kevin, shoe company, agent, what are you doing? That would be like Patrick Mahomes saying, I'm going to go play for the Jags. No, you got Andy Reid. No, don't do that. People would step in. The commissioner would call him. Andy Reid would call him. Coaches would call him. His agent would call him. Shoe companies would call him. No, don't do that. But everybody coddled KD. The commissioner coddles the stars. The general managers, the coaches coddle the stars. NBA media is Charmin soft. This is the basketball culture. So, of course, Kyrie thinks I can just be a bad teammate and not show up. You don't do that in the NFL. There was an understanding you are going into battle. And Patrick Mahomes not only loves his teammates, he buys those offensive linemen riding lawnmowers and golf bags and Rolex watches and steak dinners because we're all in it together. And that's the culture of football in America. I need you and you need me. And the NBA culture for stars is, I don't need anybody. It's fostered from AAU on. Shoe companies, basketball coaches. I mean, look at how Kyrie's situated. Nobody will say a word. We're all petrified to alienate the star player. Kevin Durant should still be in Golden State with Steph and Draymond and this terrific young talent, James Wiseman, and Klay would be back in a year. Oubre now is emerging, and Steve Kerr and Bob Myers. It's a wonderful basketball organization, and he left it, and nobody said, what are you doing? Can you imagine Josh Allen wanting to leave Buffalo? Can you imagine Patrick Mahomes saying, I'm out of here? There would be several obstacles. There would be a CBA that wouldn't allow it to happen. There would be people that would say, no, 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 Patrick, don't implode your career. But people are petrified. This Houston situation, they gave him everything. Good God. I was looking the other day. I have it in my notes somewhere. Yeah, here was the roster 3 years ago in Houston. And by the way, they couldn't make it work. They had James Harden, Chris Paul, Clint Capella, Trevor Ariza, P.J. Tucker, Eric Gordon, Gerald Green, and a guard-friendly coach. They went and got him Dwight Howard, CP3, Westbrook, Wall. It doesn't work because of Harden. It's not anybody. They had the GM. They had the coach. They had the roster. They had the forwards. They had the tough guys. They had the veteran Chris Paul. Harden didn't make it work. Nobody wants to say it. Nobody wants to call anybody out. But this is what you get. Listen, Shaq once chose KD, or Shaq once chose D-Wade over Kobe, right? They were, and I didn't love that, but it was D-Wade committed to basketball, and it was Pat Riley, and it was the Miami Heat who had a history of winning titles. So I was like, don't love it, but it is. The idea that KD chose Kyrie over Steph, inexplicable. Nobody stopped him. Nobody called him out. And this morning, it's just a mess for everybody. It's too bad. Well, this is an interesting story. Lincoln Riley is a football coach at Oklahoma. And so far as I can tell, he is totally committed to Oklahoma. But he is, if he said tomorrow, I want to be an NFL coach, he'd be the golden goose. Everybody in the league would want him, right? You know, the kind of the up-and-coming Urban Meyer, right? Like, he would be the guy. He has not said that. But according to now reports, Lincoln Riley is who the Philadelphia Eagles want. And now suddenly, I would have thought this was a great job a year ago, great fit, but now it's not. Because now Doug Peterson is the third coach with a winning record to be fired after one bad year. And now we're finding out stories that Howie Roseman is crazy power hungry as the general manager. And this is a cautionary tale. The answer for fans is always the same thing. Every city, every team, every franchise. Fire the coach. Fire him. Get rid of the coach. Coach, no good. Fire him. The problem is really good coaches have options, and that creates an image of instability. And I'll give you an example. Why is the Chargers the number one job right now? Now, think about this. The Chargers is the job everybody wants. Well, it's Justin Herbert. Well, I mean, Jacksonville's going to get Trevor Lawrence. That's not considered a number one job. The reason it's a number one job, and the Spanoses aren't considered the richest owners or the most free agent friendly owners, but it's considered a good job because they gave Anthony Lynn a job for 4 years. He was a 500 coach, only went to the playoffs once with a very good roster. And in fact, not only did he have a losing season this year, Anthony Lynn was 5-11 last year with Phillip Rivers and Pro Bowlers everywhere. And yet they brought him back. They brought him back. They said he's young, he's growing, Phillip's getting old. And so the Chargers, despite an ownership group some question, despite an apathetic fan base, despite a losing record, it's viewed as a stable organization, and that is a job you would want. Philadelphia is a blue blood franchise. This morning, you got a power-hungry GM, an owner that admitted Monday, this guy did not deserve to be fired, but we fired him. It looks unstable. It looks a little bit like a hot mess. And so the answer should really, what you don't want to do is fire the coach. The New York Giants have a history of being a blue blood franchise. They gave Tom Coughlin bad year after bad year after bad year. And what now? That's not saying they hired the right coach after him, but it did make the Giants look redeemable and grown up. The Chicago Bears this morning are retaining their general manager and their coach, Ryan Pace and Matt Nagy. Whether you like them or not, the message, the vibe, and all businesses send a vibe out, a signal out, and a message out to the marketplace. The message it sends out to the Bears is, okay, ownership. I mean, the Bears, Joey and I would tell you, the Bears' defense is good. The roster's not bad at all. If they had Tariq Cohen who got hurt, the offense would be better. I think they kind of whiffed on the Trubisky thing, but everybody has a right to whiff on somebody, right? Belichick's whiffed, I don't know, 100 times on wide receivers. But the messaging by the Bears this morning is stable, patient, another year, we're close, we're going to get this right. But everybody in Chicago wants to fire the GM and fire the coach. And the GM, I thought whiffed on the quarterback. But everybody sends signals. And in the last couple of days, that Doug Peterson firing, and I got it. The Jalen Hurts thing was bad. But then the owner can't come out and say he didn't deserve to be fired, but I'm firing him. And now I know the GM is crazy mad, power hungry. I don't think this is a good job. If I'm Lincoln Riley, I'm like, nah, I'm not going to Philadelphia. And I guess my point here is today, be very careful about always having this as an answer. Fire our coach. Philadelphia now has fired three coaches, all with winning records. Two got to a Super Bowl, one won a Super Bowl, all because they had a bad year. One bad year.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
The Miami Dolphins are promising to evaluate the entire team, and some players have already evaluated Tua. According to a report in Miami, I'm going to read you this because I just got my hands on it. Tua, according to the GM and coach, will be the starting quarterback next year. That caught the attention of at least three players within the team because they have told the Herald, the Miami Herald, in recent days, they didn't see enough from Tua to promise him anything for next season. The players who spoke to the Herald anonymously to not suffer consequences said they're unimpressed with him. They were totally caught off guard with the comments and the commitment when he was named starter in the seventh game of the year. Players said they were concerned, although he was humble and a great kid and a great competitor, they were concerned in training camp that he didn't have any special qualities and didn't think he would be ready for the year. They also said they don't see special traits in him beyond his accuracy. Oh my God, it's like we're watching the same games. They got frustrated, said the players. A defensive player said when Flores told the team Fitzpatrick would not be available for the season finale against Buffalo, players got frustrated, clearly thinking he was the better player. So this is what this was my concern. The Friday before Tua started, I said I liked him in college, but I'm watching Josh Allen and I'm watching Justin Herbert, and I'm watching Burrow, and I'm seeing Lamar, and the league is moving. You got to have some it here at that position beyond being accurate, which has never been the issue, and I didn't see it, and I don't see it. So my first takeaway with this story is, number one, you can't lie to players. You can't fool players. Like, guys figure out, you know, you can go to two basketball practices in the NBA, and guys know if it's a bad draft pick or a good draft pick. You can't fool players. They know who can play. That doesn't mean they should be general managers, but they understand who's got it and who doesn't. I've had several players on this show I've been doing this a long time, and I've asked them, how long do you have to watch a draft pick before you're like, dude can't play? And they're like, it's a couple practices. You can tell if a guy's a star first practice. You can tell if he's a bust by the third practice. And I'm not saying two is a bust. But the second thing is, general managers and head coaches do not want to invalidate their choices. So they tend to give their top draft picks much longer runway to succeed. Now, I do think Flores is an excellent coach and has the locker room. But it does show you that when you look at Miami, and Joy and I have both said this, if I said to you with any team in the league, oh, their defense is great, the coach is outstanding, I love their special teams, they didn't make the playoffs, you'd be like, oh, they got a quarterback issue. Yeah, that's what they appear to have. in Miami.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
Nick right now joining us, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz, the best or nothing. All right, let's. I said top of the show is that, you know, Kyrie Irving, I don't think is committed totally to basketball, and I don't think he's a great teammate. But the basketball culture has been like, all right, we'll still pay a bunch of money, and you're the guy. And so I'm not shocked this has evaporated. I feel terrible for Kevin Durant, who's a remarkable talent. But your thoughts on what's happening in Brooklyn with Kyrie Irving?
Yeah, I don't know why everyone's walking on eggshells. I get why Steve Nash is, because Nash might one day again have to work with him. But I don't understand why, maybe the dam broke this morning, why so few in the media had been willing to say what I think is pretty obvious. Listen, folks, I was 17 years old once and I had a job at Foot Action. And I was supposed to go in and I didn't because I went to a girls' high school soccer game because I thought this girl would date me. I no-showed, no-called. They called me, they called me and fired me the next day. I made $8.25 an hour. Kyrie Irving makes $420,000 a game and Steve Nash hadn't heard from him. The hell are we talking about? Go to work. It's not, listen, trust me. If you are gravely haunted, disappointed, scared, all of the above and more by the insurrection at the United States Capitol, you and me both, man. But you got to go to work. And if you are doing something bigger than basketball, you are undercutting it by showing up on the gram at your sister's 30th birthday, maskless in a pandemic, and 15 minutes before tip, you're on with the Sex and the City lady at the Manhattan District Attorney race. What are we talking about?
Yeah.
Like, I and one last thing. Durant now is going to play tonight. I don't know what the Nets' medical plan was, but I don't think it was Durant to play back-to-backs and five games in 7 days before the Super Bowl. And now I feel like he has to because the Nets are not winning. I know they won last night, but they don't have the record they hoped they had. And Kyrie's not there.
Yeah.
So, again, go to work or at least call your boss and say why you're not coming to work. Yeah. I think that's pretty basic.
You know, I didn't like Kevin Durant leaving the Warriors. I'm not jumping on the pile here. I said it a dozen times over the last year is if Patrick Mahomes would have said, I want out of here. There are literally several layers of protection. People would say, no. You're not going to do that. Kevin Durant. Did anybody go to Kevin Durant? Steph Curry may have limitations defensively. He may be the most selfless teammate, certainly more selfless than a Michael Jordan or other stars. I mean, I look at Kevin Durant leaving and I'm like, yeah. Nick, was this an all-time bad decision?
Well, I think we got to see. If he wins a title with the Nets, then no. Then it is the ultimate crowning achievement of his career. If they get bounced in round two and trade Kyrie, and what I'm hearing is they are willing to trade anything and everything,
yeah,
including Kyrie, aside from Durant, of course, to get Harden. And now I think that would be pretty dynamic, potentially. It also would be pretty explosive. And I do wonder if the new owner of the Nets, Joe Tsai, wants to risk repeating the same history Mikhail Prokhorov went through. Mikhail Prokhorov, right when he got there, now again, very different trade because of the age of players, but traded everything they had for KG and Pierce. They won one playoff series with them, and then they were stripped naked for 5 years, essentially, draft pick-wise.
Yeah.
You would be giving away all of your ability to improve the team moving forward to try to win a title right now. I get why KD did what he did. I understand, Colin, why he wanted to win a title outside of Golden State. I don't understand why, of all the guys he could have attached himself to, he picked Kyrie. He could have gone with Kawhi.
Yeah.
And then your Clippers pick wouldn't have looked so foolish. He could have gone with Kawhi with the Clippers.
Yeah, you're right.
And then that's a real championship contender. I don't get it.
Yeah.
I don't get it.
Now, you have defended James Harden, but I think you've come around to my side a little in that I do think Houston built a really nice roster. Let's take the owner out of it. I think Mike D'Antoni's good for guards. I think Chris Paul, Dwight Howard 8 years ago, Clint Capella, P.J. Tucker. And it's always somebody else's fault. And now Harden's like, I did everything I did. I love the city. Fine. But doesn't Harden, isn't he culpable for some of this? It seems like, Nick,
of course,
they've bent over backwards for him for 6 years, 7 years.
And if he simply wanted a fresh start, it's like, man, my GM's gone. It's a new coach. I wish he would have given Steven Silas a chance. It's a new coach. It, you know, ownership has changed since I've been here. And that owner, I understand why a lot of people would have issues with him. That would be fine with me. There's a better way to go about it. James Harden, the first three games of the year, reminded everyone he's still one of the best players in the league, averaging 37 and 10. Then he took a night off, and then literally he took a night off. He was off. And then the last five games, he's figuratively taken a night off. He's at 20 points or less in four consecutive games. That hasn't happened since he was in Oklahoma City. And he's clearly, visibly, obviously out of shape.
Yeah.
So you got one of two options if you're Harden, like you're a Harden defender. Either he this quickly went past his prime and he's no longer a top, forget five, top 15 player in the league, or he's mailing it in, or he is actively not giving his best effort. I don't know what is the better option. I know what option I believe. I think it's the second option. And again, I don't think it's a way to conduct yourself. Like Anthony Davis demanded out of New Orleans after they had failed him for the better part of a decade. But when he played his hardest.
Yeah.
No one that's watched Harden thinks he's playing his hardest right now.
Yeah. Nick Wright joining us. So you need to be totally honest with me here. Cleveland Browns, best offensive line in football. Getting no respect, being dissed by Sammy Watkins. Kansas City is rusty and musty. You're a little bit concerned this weekend with Baker and the Browns coming to town. A little concerned about how you played in December. Little?
Well, Liz, I'd have to check the calendar, but I know that we went to New Orleans and to Tampa near the end of the year and had double-digit leads in the fourth quarter, both those games. I know that, you know, until the Steelers started losing games, the Chiefs were playing essentially perfect football. I know that you said Green Bay, outside of one half, had a flawless season, which I found very interesting because I looked and checked when you said it. It was like, oh, they were 13-3. So what were those crappy Chiefs? I was like, oh, they were 14-1 when Mahomes played. So what's that season? Colin, don't do this, man. Don't. I have been the biggest Baker and the Browns supporter. They are going to get annihilated on Sunday in Arrowhead.
Ooh, ooh.
Don't hitch your wagon to them going to Arrowhead against a rested, healthy Chiefs team. Don't do that. You're going to regret it. Just like, and oh my goodness, I know they won, but Joy Taylor, say you wouldn't have lost the bet, but you might not have survived the game because of a heart condition. When Josh Allen fumbled, you know, that's what I was waiting for all game long. He fumbles, it's right there, and then they pick it up. I still can't get over it. You'd have figuratively had to be covered in ketchup and mustard. Joy Taylor really did save you there, Colin,
even though
the bet was rescinded.
Well, I will say this, though. The playoffs aren't the same. I mean, Kansas City trailed a bunch. When you watch Buffalo's ability to lose at the line of scrimmage for 3.5 hours and win over probably the best 7 seed we'll ever see in the playoffs, little concern that Buffalo is going to win another playoff game and you're going to have a mustard bath?
I'm rooting for him. I'm rooting for him. I'm in a weird spot because I'm rooting for them, but that would then make me lose the bet and I have to get covered in ketchup and mustard. I understand that. But I can recover from that. I really, really want the Chiefs to win the Super Bowl. I think Buffalo is a far easier opponent for the Chiefs than Baltimore. Baltimore scares me. And Baltimore, if they beat Buffalo and they're hot and they got 2 playoff wins, they came back from 10 down on Tennessee and then beat Josh Allen, then that's a scary team. The Chiefs will annihilate Buffalo and Arrowhead the way they annihilated them in Buffalo. I'm not worried about that. But I am a little concerned that the ketchup and mustard could be coming my way. Joy didn't save me the way she saved you. Shows where her loyalties lie.
Yeah.
But I'm not worried about the Bills beating the Chiefs. They could beat Baltimore. I don't think they will. Beat the Chiefs. Come on, man. Come on, Colin.
Don't do this. This is Nick Wright.
That might be me.
So tragic.
That's true.
It's tragic if it happened
to
me.
Great.
It's not really.
Yeah, it is.
With Nick, it's
it was going to be tragic.
It's just bad judgment. It's tragic if it happens to me.
I may or may not have heard from the executives a good old thank you for saving you from that. May or may not.
Nick Wright.
I feel like I should get a raise. See you guys.
See you later. All right. And you do deserve a raise.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
So there's 7 job openings in the NFL. Philadelphia, Chargers, Jets, Jags, Houston, Lions, Atlanta. And there's about 15. This morning we got to about 13, 14, 15 candidates. I won't waste your time with all of them, but there's some good, some not as good. And I thought, you know, let's play. I'm not making a prediction here. I'm not being an NFL insider here. I'm just telling you, what do I think fits the best? The city, the owner, the coach, his strengths, his liabilities. Again, this is not a prediction. This is Colin's coaching carousel. These are the guys that I think fit the current NFL openings. Now, this is not college football where there's 160 Division I jobs or 130. There's 32 of these babies, yep. And they're all good. If you get the right quarterback, they're all great lifetime. The NFL pension for coaches is amazing. It pays great. You're getting coaches now making 9, 10, 12 million bucks a year in the NFL. Urban Meyer reportedly could make 12. Joy, here we go.
All right, let's start with the Los Angeles Chargers.
All right, I think it's the best job, so let's go get the best candidate, Brian Daboll. He's the Buffalo Bills offensive coordinator. Here's why it works. He worked under Saban. He worked under Belichick. He's had hard-driving people above him. We know he can play well with others. He was successful at both. The other thing is we've seen the development of Josh Allen. Well, Justin Herbert doesn't need the development, so he's inheriting a guy that looks like Josh Allen without his coaching. So to what level can they take that? He is also went to the same high school as the Chargers general manager, Tom Telesco. So they know each other. Anthony Lynn also came from Buffalo, so these organizations work well together. Brian Daboll, Chargers, to me, is the fit.
All right, the Jacksonville Jaguars.
I would say Urban Meyer, they need a shot of relevance, and he's it. Listen, it's an apathetic market. It's a college market, and he's a college icon. Cap space, draft picks, they don't have a general manager, and he's going to want some say in personnel. He probably needs somebody to know the cap, not the players. He has a house in Florida. He previously called Trevor Lawrence the best college quarterback he's ever seen. And this feels like a fit to me. He's going to have the power. He wants power. He is a culture changer. This franchise needs a cultural change, not just a play caller. Urban Meyer's the best fit.
The New York Jets.
Despite my staff's misgiving, Jason Garrett. A very highly functional man, a little boring, but a highly functional man in a highly dysfunctional organization. He went to Princeton, Columbia. He grew up in New Jersey. He just spent the year in New York. He gets the media. He's got an Eli Manning, Derek Jeter quality. He talks but says nothing.
That's true.
So he never creates fires. He just puts them out. The Cowboys had the number 6 scoring offense when he was there. He had a winning record, but what I really like about it, he is a teacher. He is not a hype master. He's the opposite of Rex Ryan, who burned really hot in New York for about 3 years and then was sort of an eye roll. He's a grown man, Ivy League educated, played in the league, and whether they stay with Sam Darnold or go to Justin Fields, both have consistency issues. I think he can shore that up. Jason Garrett, Jets.
The Atlanta Falcons.
To me, Arthur Smith works. First of all, he has a house in Nashville. Southern guy. His dad, of course, the founder of FedEx in Memphis, knows the South. The Falcons are the team in the South. And by the way, Matt Ryan's there for the next 2-3 years anyway, so this is a guy that makes quarterbacks better. Look what he did with Ryan Tannehill. The other thing is he runs a similar offense to Kyle Shanahan. Matt Ryan knows the offense and flourished under the offense. I think he wants to stay this, you know, that side of the Mississippi. I think he has family there. In fact, I kind of know somebody in his family. I think this is a perfect fit. And by the way, it's nothing against Raheem Morris, but can we give Matt Ryan an offensive head coach for a change? He's had a couple. He's had Dan Quinn. He's had Mike Smith. I think it's time to give Matt Ryan, who you're going to be stuck with for a couple years, and there's worse guys to be stuck with.
Right.
But I think he deserves an offensive head coach.
The Detroit Lions.
I'm going to go with Robert Saleh. I don't think it's a great job. He has a history in Michigan. First of all, their defense is terrible, and so they hire a defensive guy who knows defensive personnel. He is a motivator. I think he has a chance to be a culture changer. He's a big personality, good-looking, big-energy guy. This is not an organization that just needs a play caller. They need somebody to shake stuff up, walk into a room. He's a man's man, very alpha. And the Lions, He began his coaching career in Michigan, so he's got history there. He's close friends with Matt LaFleur, the Packers head coach, so I'm sure they've been talking for years about the division. It feels like a good fit. It's not a great job, but it feels like a good fit.
Houston Texans.
Eric Bieniemy seems obvious. First, Deshaun Watson. He wants him. Secondly, this is an organization where he's apparently not going to have, the coach is not going to have a ton of power, but what you're looking for is a bit of a play caller. I don't need a GM here. That's not what Bieniemy does. He dials up plays. And with Deshaun Watson, I think offensively, the Houston Texans led the NFL in yards per play. They've got a Kansas City feel to them. They got a star quarterback. They have good offensive line, at least on the left side. And the feeling is you're not going to have power there as a coach. But can you have a working relationship with your star player and elevate him? And I think he can. Remember, you just brought a Patriots guy down, so you're not going to have say in personnel. That's not. And by the way, Bieniemy doesn't want that. Bieniemy also worked with Patrick Mahomes, a young quarterback who likes to play sometimes off script. And Bieniemy's a former player who can handle the ego of a player, handle the independence of a star quarterback. I think he works.
Finally, the Philadelphia Eagles.
I'm going to go with a wild card. I'm going to say 31-year-old Joe Brady. Now, he feels young, but so did Sean McVay. Here's what I would say. You're going to get no personnel say here.
True.
Joe Brady's fine with that. Urban wouldn't be. Doug Peterson wasn't. There's a lot of coaches that want personnel say. You're not going to get it in Philly. And this is what Joe Brady is. By the way, Sean McVay, we never hear about him wanting personnel say with Les Snead. He's a coach. Brady's a coach. The other thing is they're really bad at wide receiver and they have a quarterback controversy. His strength is quarterback wide receiver symmetry. That's what he does well. Right now, the Eagles need to draft quarterbacks, wide receivers better. They were last in the NFL, lowest graded wide receiver group. And I know people freak out he's young, but Joe Judge is pretty young and Sean McVay is pretty young. Lincoln Riley's up for jobs. He's really young. Remember, we always say this. My son's much smarter than I was at 14. 31 is kind of the new 39 or 41, and I think he works. He doesn't bring the ego and the cachet of other coaches, and I think right now that team just needs somebody that can fix the offensive side of the ball because they got two stars on defense. They got to fix the quarterback, fix the receivers. So there you go. Those are my NFL fit. These are not predictions, by the way. I'm just playing matchmaker.
It's really strong. You might have a future in that.
Not terrible. I think I was pretty good, to be honest. Philadelphia is the wild card. I just thought to myself.
Well, no, it makes sense because he is young. You're not going to come in with the same cachet as a coach who has either been a head coach before or has been working through the coaching ranks for a very long time to get this opportunity and wants more say. It makes sense because you're right. You're not going to get any control there.
No. So don't.
So you have to be completely cool with it.
And the coolest guys, young people getting an opportunity, Sean McVay. Sean McVay has never once pushed back on personnel. We've never even heard that story. Sean wants to coach. He wins a Super Bowl. Maybe he wants more say, but he hadn't gotten there yet.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
James Harden. Situation's interesting. I didn't like Harden when he came in the league initially. I think he's kind of a one-trick pony. I do think he moved his game a little to try to be a little better defensive player. But it is remarkable. Last night, he's gone for about 5-6 games. He's not in shape. He's dogging it. He's not putting up the numbers. And last night, it came to an end. After their blowout loss to the Lakers, he finally admitted, I'm out of here.
We're just not good enough. We don't obviously chemistry, talent-wise, just everything. And it was clear, like I said, these last few games. I love this city. I literally, I've done everything that I can. This situation is crazy. It's something that I don't think can be fixed. So, thanks.
Okay, this is not in Houston a Deshaun Watson situation where you've got like this weird cult-like sensibility. They've made really bad trades. The roster is uneven. You let go of a star. No. That's not the Rockets. The Rockets had the 65 wins and 17 losses just 3 years ago. Their roster was stacked. James Harden, Chris Paul, Clint Capella, PJ Tucker, Trevor Ariza, Eric Gordon, Gerald Green, with a guard-friendly head coach. James Harden had a perfect NBA coach and backcourt for him. Chris Paul's the guy that wants to defend. Clint Capella wants to defend. Trevor Ariza wants to defend. PJ Tucker wants to defend. Eric Gordon will defend. You didn't even have to defend much. This is not Deshaun Watson. Deshaun Watson's unhappy because weird stuff is going on. They built him the palace to win, and he can't work with anybody. Nobody's ever called him out. Like, I'll say it again. James wants a title, but doesn't want to put the work in for the title. Whenever you win in the NBA, you got to sacrifice something. Kevin Durant goes to the Warriors, you sacrifice shots. LeBron goes to Miami, it's his city, not really yours. You got to sacrifice something. James, what are you giving up? Because you want a title, what are you giving up? Because LeBron has had to give things up. He gave up money in Miami. He gave up a roster and went to a free agent deathbed in Cleveland. Then a dysfunctional Laker franchise. You think LeBron's going to the best place? No, he's not. LeBron's got Miami was good. Okay, I'll give you that. But Cleveland and the Lakers, LeBron sacrificed things. He didn't go to the best roster in LA. He didn't go to the best roster in Cleveland. So what are you willing to give up, James? Because I've seen Steph Curry sacrifice shots and money. I've seen Kevin Durant sacrifice money. I've seen LeBron sacrifice money and functional franchises. They did everything for him. Everything for him. They built the palace, and he's not willing to give up the ball or give up the attitude. This is on James, not everybody else.